Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, we got a lineup change this morning. Tony D is off. John Stashower in, Ron Culver in. Good to have you with us on this Monday morning, Sports Map Radio. May the 3rd, lots to do for the next 3 hours. As we recap the sports weekend, we had a Kentucky Derby. We've got an NBA regular season winding down. We got a baseball season that's about a month in. We got new rules, or I don't even call them rules, new wrinkles from both those sports that are both getting blasted. So we're going to weigh in on that. But obviously, the bulk of the program this morning for the next couple of hours will be regarding the NFL. Perhaps you've heard Aaron Rodgers, who was at the Derby on Saturday, but he's disgruntled. You know, you're Adam Schefter, you're typing out that tweet on Thursday, and he decides to use the word disgruntled. He could have been, could have used upset or angry or irritated or annoyed. He went disgruntled, and now it's everything. Aaron Rodgers is disgruntled. Look, this is real. This is a real story. Sometimes stories come out and you're like, ah, that's nothing. That'll go away. I don't know about this one. This is the MVP of the league. This is a first ballot Hall of Famer. This is a guy who's played 16 years in one place. And I was just reading Peter King on his Monday morning column on NBCSports.com. And, you know, obviously Peter, well-connected. He wrote that he thinks it's more likely that Aaron Rodgers retires and just becomes a game show host than it is that he's back quarterbacking in Green Bay next year. So we'll talk about that. And obviously the NFL draft. Now here's one thing we will not get into this morning or any other morning, and that is there'll be no grades assessed. Now, we will talk to Josh Edwards, writes about the draft for CBSSports.com. He'll join us next hour. So, you know, we'll get into the, you know, the tidbits and the nooks and crannies of the NFL draft. But this idea, I feel for Mel Kiper. This is not, he doesn't want to do this. He's assigned to do this, to assign grades. I think the Indianapolis Colts, I'm not sure whether to give him a B or a B minus. Mel doesn't know how these guys are going to turn out. Todd McShay doesn't know. Bill Belichick doesn't know. Nobody knows, okay? There is no crystal ball. Some of these guys will be good. Some of them won't. But we'll talk about the NFL draft coming up. Stay with us. Sports Map.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
He's off. He's off tomorrow. John Stashower pinch hitting. Good to have you here on Sports Map Radio on this Monday morning. NFL draft is in the books. SEC had 65 players drafted. That's a record. It's one more than the SEC had 2 years ago. The SEC always produces the most draft. No surprise. We know that the strongest conference. And Alabama led the way. Alabama has had 51 players drafted in the last 5 years, and this hardly hurts them the next season, even though, you know, they just had six go in the first round. They'll be probably great and maybe national champions again next year. And people say, you know, people have asked me, how does Alabama do this every year? You know, how does Nick Saban get these guys every year? He loses players to the NFL, and then he just replaces them. You know, I don't know that Nick Saban has magical, mystical recruiting talents. Here's what I think he does when he goes into a kid's living room. He doesn't talk about the school's, you know, anthropology department. No, that doesn't come up. He doesn't even talk about, you know, he may talk about, but it's no big deal. He talks about whatever, the weight room, or, you know, how often they're on TV or anything. One thing, come to Alabama, come play for me. I will get you to the NFL. And that's all they need to hear. That's all they care about. They want to go to a school that will get them to the NFL, and Alabama does that better than anyone else. 51 drafted players in 5 years ties a record that you really have to stick an asterisk on. USC in the had a 5-year period in the 1970s with 51, but they had a 12-round draft. This is a 7-round draft, so it's much different. And as I said at the top, grades are stupid at this point because we just don't know. Some of these guys will be really good. Some of them won't. Before we start going gaga that, you know, Trevor Lawrence will be in the Hall of Fame, that Zach Wilson will be the best quarterback for the Jets since Joe Namath, that the 49ers were brilliant to trade up and get Trey Lance, and that Justin Fields will finally be the star quarterback that the Bears have been looking for forever, and that Mac Jones is going to be, you know, the heir apparent to Tom Brady. Let's take a look at quarterbacks taken in recent years. Because from 2009, you know, this is when you assess the grades. The idea that Mel Kiper has to give grades out today is so silly because he doesn't know how these guys are going to turn out. But if you want to give grades when you look back, that's a pretty good idea for a media entity to do, but we don't really see that very often. But 2009 to 2016, all right? In 2009, three quarterbacks taken in the first round. Matthew Stafford, no, he's had a very good career. Mark Sanchez, pretty good start to his career, but then became a journeyman. He's on TV now. And Josh Freeman, who is long gone. The next year, Sam Bradford, first pick of the draft. He bounced around. He's out of league. Tim Tebow, well, he was a minor league outfielder, and now he wants to be a Jacksonville Jaguars tight end. Cam Newton was an MVP, now different place. Jake Locker, long gone. Blaine Gabbert, career backup. Christian Ponder, long gone. Andrew Luck, the next year, first pick. Obviously, he would be on the same team he decided to leave, but he did leave. RG3, Ryan Tannehill has moved on. Brandon Whedon, who Jerry Jones once said, you know, had a beautiful pass, but not a good quarterback. The next year, we only had one first-round quarterback, the immortal E.J. Manuel. And by the way, the first pick of the second round that year was Geno Smith. How'd he turn out? 2014, Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, who's on his, fourth team now. Top quarterbacks went 1-2 in both 15 and 16. Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, all on different teams. Oh, yeah, Paxton Lynch was in the 16 draft, out of the league. So from 2009 to 2016, 22 quarterbacks were taken in the first round. None are on the same team right now. Zip, zero, zilch. And you can go back to, you know, Rick Minor, second pick of the 93 draft. You can go to Ryan Leaf, second pick of the 96 draft. In the 99 draft, there were quarterbacks taken 1, 2, 3. The 1 was Tim Couch, not very good. The 2 was Donovan McNabb. He was good. The 3 was Akili Smith, very bad. And then Cade McNown was in that draft. He was a top 10 pick, long gone. Mitchell Trubisky, remember him? Now you're back up in Buffalo. Second pick just 4 years ago. Bust. Sam Darnold's on a different team. Josh Rosen's on his fourth team. Dwayne Haskins is already on a different team. That was only 2 years ago. So the point being, we just don't know. A lot of these guys who get drafted and we see the highlights and we see the draft experts rave about them, and they're just not going to be, you know, of the names I just said, some of them are, you know, Cam Newton won an MVP, got to a Super Bowl. He certainly wasn't a bust, but right now he's not an elite quarterback. Maybe Matthew Stafford still is. The jury's still out on some of these guys like Jared Goff and Carson Wentz and Jameis Winston. They're going to get chances with different teams, but a lot of them just couldn't play. I mean, it was just obvious right from the start that they couldn't play, even though they looked really good on tape and in college and all that. So if we look back 5 years from now, my guess is that these five quarterbacks that went in the first half of the first round, you know, I mean, certainly Lawrence, who's been ticketed for stardom since, you know, coming out of the womb, he's got the best chance to really be a star. Of the others, you know, maybe two are pretty good and two might be pretty bad. Let's bring in Ron Culver, joins us as he does every morning on this show. What do you think about these quarterbacks? Do you got a feel at all for who might be good, maybe who might not be so good?
Of course not. There's a part of me, though, that I'm a little worried about this, but I do have a feeling that Zach Wilson might be a bust.
Really?
I don't know why. I'm not. There's no validity to it. I just think that if there's a chance of one of these quarterbacks to be the biggest bust, I think it might be Zach Wilson.
Well,
Why is because of the pressure of New York City. I don't think he's ever had to deal with it before. You know, being a kid from Utah. Plus, it's the Jets. I have that weird feeling of, the Jets look like they did all the right things in this draft, but that was the draft.
Well, what was the headline of the draft just 3 years ago? The Jets, they got Sam Darnold with the third pick. Everyone thought he was going to be the first pick. They got him at three. Now they
fell into their laps.
Yes, and now their quarterback situation, the problems have been solved. You know, he's going to own New York. And look, we know that Sam was hurt. He had injuries. He had mono. He had a bad offensive line. He didn't have receivers to throw to. He had different coaches. A lot of things didn't help him. And he's going to get another chance now, it looks like, at Carolina to see if he can live up to what was expected of him. And, you know, he seems like a good dude, so I'll root for him.
But I'm not going to say that Trevor Lawrence is going to get out there and rewrite the record books. But I did like what Urban Meyer did by drafting Travis Etienne.
Etienne, sure.
Because that's his outlet. You know, if he can't find anything downfield, he knows that he'll know where Etienne is at all times. Because those two have been playing together, for 2-3 years now?
Well, you know, I said before, Lawrence has been expected to go number one forever. And so, yeah.
Since he was a freshman in high school.
You'd expect him to be really good. The difference between him and some of these other guys, especially Wilson and Trey Lance and Mac Jones, not so much Justin Fields. Fields was a big star out of high school, you know, didn't get the starting job in Georgia, transferred to Ohio State, but people have known about him. But you look at Wilson, Lance, and Jones, none of these guys were on the radar. A year ago, Zach Wilson didn't even know if he was going to be the starting quarterback at BYU. Trey Lance was playing at North Dakota State, then didn't play at all in 2020, played one game. And Mac Jones was a backup at Alabama. So, yeah, you wonder, are these guys really that good? Now, maybe they will be good, but maybe they won't be. And so that's why.
Now, I will say this, I, out of all five quarterbacks, Mac Jones will probably get to a Super Bowl first. And that's primarily just because of the team that he's on.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, they didn't look very good last year, but they have had a really good offseason. They have the best coach. So,
I can understand that.
Certainly eight put guys them ahead of the Jets and the Bears and the Jaguars.
Yeah. Right. And they had eight guys on their defense who opted out last season.
No question.
So I think that's going to make all those guys returning is going to make a huge difference. It's not going to be because of him. I'm not saying Mac Jones is leading that team to a Super Bowl. I just think that he has the greatest pathway as opposed to the other teams.
I would agree with that. All right, lots more to do on the NFL draft. Josh Edwards next hour, get his thoughts. But this Aaron Rodgers story is real. And we'll give you the latest coming up. We'll take a break. Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Tony D out today. John Stashower in. Ron is in. Ron, I there's a guy very much in the news, and I got to be honest. Maybe you can help me out. I don't know how to pronounce his name. This GM of the Packers, is it Gutkunst? Gutkunst?
Sure.
Well, just you're gonna
GM of Packers. That's what I'm calling him.
He's Brian G. I wouldn't have if you would ask me on Jeopardy. GM of the Packers, I would not have known. He's relatively new in this position, but he's the guy, again, I reference Peter King's column, he's the guy who's at the heart of this Aaron Rodgers disgruntlement, I guess. And I don't know how much of it, is it just the Jordan Love draft pick of a year ago? It's got to be more than just that. But, you know, Ron, as we just talked a little about the draft just completed, but if we go back to a year ago, it baffles me. It's just idiotic what the Packers did last year. They not only drafted Jordan Love, they traded up to be able to draft Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Look, when you go in these drafts, in any other position, I think you want to go with the best player on your board and all that. That's okay, because you can, you know, you get a linebacker, you get any defensive player, a wide receiver. I was a little surprised the Giants seemed that they were set at wide receiver. They still drafted one, but you can find ways to get guys on the field. But you can only play one quarterback. You can't play two. So you have Aaron Rodgers, and he's still playing, obviously, at a very high level. He was just the MVP of the league. And he needed some extra weapons, and you not only drafted another quarterback, you traded up to get him. I a year later, I still just don't understand it.
Aaron Rodgers has been a godsend to the Packers. I mean, when you go from having Brett Favre leading your team, there's usually a drop-off, right? I mean, very rarely do we see one quarterback just take over for another quarterback and keep the same winning ways. I think the only other example I can think of is Andrew Luck with Peyton Manning. And the fact of the matter that, the Packers have never drafted an offensive player in the first round, have never went out and got a weapon for Aaron Rodgers, and he still produces on the field. Now, I mean, it's kind of a weird situation just because they've been to the NFC Conference Championship twice now in the last couple of years. And, you know, they're still finding ways to win, and it's all because of Aaron Rodgers. And yet, you know, even though with the news dropping, like he said, like he did before the draft, of he's upset.
Disgruntled.
Disgruntled. The Packers doubled down and drafted another defensive player.
Yeah. They did draft a receiver named Rodgers.
I thought that was funny.
But look, I don't know. I can't get in Aaron Rodgers' brain completely here and know exactly why he's upset to the point where he doesn't want to play for the Green Bay Packers anymore. But apparently this GM has a lot to do with it. And I don't know that it's just the fact that this GM decided to draft Jordan Love a year ago. There's got to be more to it than just that. And maybe more to it than just being unhappy with the GM. But the unhappiness, this disgruntlement, is real. And now, here's the thing. Look, players have the right, certainly star players even more so. You know, I can understand they have the right to want to maybe play in a different team or a different city. And they get drafted. There are those who think it's not fair that, you know, these athletes have to get drafted. You know, there should be free agency, and everyone should be allowed to go wherever they want. Now, I don't think that would work from a competitive balance standpoint in all the sports. But free agency, which wasn't around for a long time, is something that these players should get. They should at some point in their careers be able to, if they want to go somewhere else, they should have the right to do that. But that's the time to do it. When you are a free agent, Aaron Rodgers is not a free agent. Now, he can opt out after the 21 season. If he wants to do that, he should do it. But between Rodgers demanding a trade, and we had Russell Wilson never coming straight out and demanding a trade, but letting it be known that he's unhappy. Obviously, Deshaun Watson in Houston, now that story has taken on different twists and turns because of things going on with him. But he had just signed a new contract and then wanted to be traded because they had a bad season and he had issues. So, I mean, you look at what Tom Brady did. Okay, look, I think Tom Brady, it's fair to say, was disgruntled a lot in New England. You know, Bill Belichick can make you disgruntled. But what did he do? He stayed in New England, never talked about necessarily wanting to leave, became a free agent. When you're a free agent, you want to go somewhere else? You can do it. Look at what LeBron did in the NBA. He never demanded a trade. He went to different teams when he was a free agent. And I think that's what Aaron Rodgers should do if he really wants out. I think he should suck it up. I don't know. Can it be that bad in Green Bay? He's got a good team. As you just mentioned, they played the NFC Championship game. He could very probably. They're talking about going to the Broncos or the Raiders, really? You'd rather go there? So he should play another year. Maybe things get better with this GM. And then if he wants to opt out, he can do it. And he'd be allowed to do it. And I wouldn't blame him for doing it. But I'm not crazy about what he did these last few days.
No, it's, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's shallow. He definitely wants to voice his opinion. But I think there's a growing trend right now that needs to, maybe needs to stop, needs to go in the other direction. Because all these quarterbacks, once they get upset, they're trying to do what the NBA players are able to do,
yep,
which is force a trade. And what we've seen a couple of times now is that these NBA players who are upset force a trade to the team that they want to go to. You know, and that I think is going to become problematic. I mean, we had Deshaun Watson, who's, you know, trying to force a trade, trying to get out of Houston. Now, his situation is different. I understand where his disgruntledness is coming from. And I also think maybe he kind of had a hint of all the allegations that were coming his way and just wanted to get out of Houston.
That's possible. But right now, that's all on hold.
He is untradeable at this point. Russell Wilson tried to force a trade. I don't even know if his heart was into forcing a trade. I just think he wanted to see what was out there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And so you have that happening. Now you have Aaron Rodgers doing the same thing. I don't know if this is – I hope it's not a growing trend where you get these star quarterbacks. I mean, are we to think, like, you know, a couple of years from now, is Baker Mayfield going to do the same thing? Or is, you know, Lamar Jackson going to do the same thing when they're tired of, like, hey, this team just isn't producing around me. I got to go.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, and as I said, if you're a free agent, you have the right to do whatever you want.
Yep.
I would not criticize him. And, you know, you mentioned the NBA. When Paul George was at Indiana, and I think this is the same of Anthony Davis when he was in New Orleans, they were not free agents, but they had 1 year left on their contracts, and they had already decided, you know what, I'm not happy here, I want to go somewhere else, I'm just letting you know that a year from now, I'm going to sign with another team, and you're not going to get anything in return. So you should know that, because you might want to trade me now so that you get something in return. And that's what happened. And you look at, like, the Indiana Pacers in that trade with Oklahoma City got Sabonis, who's an all-star, and Victor Oladipo, who became an all-star. And the Pelicans in the trade for Anthony Davis got back from the Lakers, what, Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart? I mean, they got some good players back, so it worked out for both teams. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with those NBA players who went to their team and said, look, I'm going to leave. And maybe Rodgers is in the same boat because he can opt out after 21. And so maybe he's going to them and saying, look, I'm going to opt out. I could come back in 21, but that'll be my last year. So maybe you should trade me and get something for me now. I don't know if that came up in conversation or not. If it did, then I'm not going to be as hard on him. But right now I got some problems with what Aaron Rodgers has done. Matt LaFleur is the coach. Now he's not, again, we can't get into Rodgers' head. But apparently he does not have a problem with Matt LaFleur. I think he did have some problems with Mike McCarthy. LaFleur said, I can't fathom not having Aaron Rodgers. I can't take my brain there, is what he said. So he doesn't dislike the coach. He's got a problem with the general manager. And this is going to be fascinating to see. My guess is, I can't see them trading him. I mean, he's Aaron Rodgers. He's the MVP of the league, and they're a good team, and they almost get into the Super Bowl. I can't see them trading him. But, you know, he has made a lot of money. He's got this Jeopardy gig, apparently, in the back pocket. That pays a lot of money and is not a lot of hard work. I think, what do they work like? I think they do all the shows in a year in, like, 6 weeks.
I remember... I think it's done similarly to Wheel of Fortune. I remember reading with Wheel of Fortune, they work 2 days a month.
I mean, that's not bad. And those, I mean, how much does Pat Sajak make? Even Vanna makes a ton.
They're making like $10 million
eight
a
figures.
Month or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, eight
something
figures.
Stupid.
So, that's not a bad thing to have in your back pocket. Now, I think he wants to keep playing because he's playing at such a high level.
He wants to keep playing. He just, and that's part of the problem is that I think you're right. I think he does go back to Green Bay. I don't know if he finishes out the entire contract.
Yeah. Because, he can opt out after 21, but the contract actually goes through 23. Going to be fascinating. Peter King thinks it's more likely that he retires than coming back to play in Green Bay. All right, we'll switch gears a little. Some NBA, some baseball. It's coming up. John Stashire with you. Sports Map Radio.
listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I'm John Stashower. I was in the alternate site. That's what they call it in the baseball now. It used to be called up for the minors. They're not playing the minors. The alternates. I've been in the alternate site. But I'm off the bench for you this morning. Good to be with you on Sports Map Radio with Ron Culver. So we'll get back to the football, obviously, all the draft stuff, the Aaron Rodgers stuff. Baseball's a month into the season, and baseball's got some issues. News flash, right? There was a game last week where the Mets and the Red Sox. The Red Sox won 1-0. That was the game where DeGrom, like usual, pitched great and didn't get a win. And there were 6 hits in the game and 30 strikeouts. Something's wrong here. The baseball's got to do some things. So they're trying. They're thinking about doing some things. They're experimenting with moving the rubber back, which, you know, gives the hitter a little more time to look at the pitch, would presumably increase some offense. I'm certainly in favor. I think they should do away with these shifts. It would be easy to do. You put a line, you know, second base, and you got to have 2 infielders on each side of the second base back. I mean, you can shade, but you can't put 3 on one side. I don't see why you can't do that and legislate it and give yourself a chance for more hits because there's so few hits now. You know, the strike zone is a mess right now. I think we could go to robotic umpires for calling balls and strikes. I think that's probably coming. The 3-batter rule that is in place now, you know, doesn't make a huge difference because these games still take forever, but it helps. And I'm certainly in favor of the 7-inning games and the doubleheaders. It's ridiculous to ask a fan to sit there for 2 9-inning games. It's hard enough to do 1, let alone 2. But I don't know how you feel about this, Ron. The rule that was put in last year, and I guess they had experimented it in the minors, and they used it in the shortened season, and they came back with it this year. And at first I was like, yeah, this is all right. I've come off it a little bit. Is this extra innings runner starting at second base? Are you in favor of that or not?
No, I think it's the dumbest rule I've ever heard of. I hate it.
I mean, I thought it might create some more strategy with how to play it. But I'm watching a game the other day, and they go into extra innings, so you got the runner at second. Okay, guy comes up, lays down a bunt. Guy goes to third. Next guy comes up, it's a little fly ball. Game over.
Yep.
I mean, that's just you got to earn the run a little bit. Now, you could argue the other team could have done the same thing and didn't. But here's the reason the rule was put in was to eliminate, you know, that have more scoring in extra innings so the games don't go, you know, 16, 17 innings. But what we're seeing is it's so easy to score with a runner starting at second is that both teams are scoring. So then they go to the 11th inning. And then, you know, I think the games are shorter, but I think it's a gimmick that I don't think you need.
No, get rid of that and bring in the universal DH, please.
Well, I'm definitely in favor of that. And I think that's coming with the new labor deal. I guess they had to, I don't know why they didn't do it this year. They had it last year. Look, we could do the whole morning on the DH, but it's ridiculous.
And listen, I'm fine with 7-inning doubleheaders. I'm okay with that. I understand the reasoning behind that. It's a long, you know, long day for those guys.
Yeah. And the fans.
But if you're going to do that, then you need to honor that there's, you know, complete games do happen or a no-hitter can happen in 7
Madison
innings.
Madison Bumgarner?
Yeah.
So you think he should be included in the official no-hitter?
Yeah,
I think you could differentiate somehow. I don't know, with an asterisk or
you don't even need an asterisk. Just, I mean, did he do what he was supposed to do according to MLB guidelines? They're the ones who set the rules. Yes,
right.
He did.
No, I agree.
They made the seven innings.
If it's a complete game, you got to be consistent, right? If you're going to get credit for the complete game, get credit for the no-hitter.
Yeah.
But I think there is another argument in that God knows how many hundreds and thousands of pitchers have pitched 7 innings of no-hit baseball, but not a no-hitter because they've lost a no-hitter.
All you got to do is say complete game no-hitter, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. They used to have it. They changed the rule. I remember there was a guy who threw like a rain-shortened 5-inning no-hitter. You know, there were guys who lost games, you know, because of errors and stuff. And so they decided to come to the conclusion, you got to throw nine innings.
But my other argument with
that, and you got to win the game.
My other argument with that is that you'll give a team credit for a no-hitter when, you know, if a pitcher went six innings and then you had like two or three relievers come in and finish it out, you'll give them the credit for a no-hitter.
Oh, absolutely. Combined no-hitters. We see that all the time now. Yeah.
So, but yeah, the right, because I got burned the other night. I'm a Dodgers fan. I grew up in Southern California. And Dodgers and Padres, they're just going to have epic battles all the way through. I think it was a Sunday night game, maybe last weekend. And, you know, the game went into extras because the Dodgers coughed up 6-run lead.
Right.
That was terrible. But what I didn't like about it is that, you know, and it makes sense that, you know, you're going to put the last out made on second.
Right.
Well, the last out ended up being Tatis Jr. And I knew for a fact, once I saw that he was already standing, he was already given second base, I'm like, oh, that guy's scoring, and this is it.
It's a good point. It gives you a big advantage, depending on who made the last out.
Yeah, he stole third base, and then he just kind of waited patiently. I can't remember who the guy in the Padres was. I think it was Hosmer. Just hit a monster bomb to deep center field. And Tatis, I mean, he just tagged up. I think he moonwalked the home plate. He had so much time.
Yeah. I think there's been so much pushback to this rule that they will take a look at this. It's going to be good. By the way, they're not doing it in the playoffs. So that's another weird wrinkle. Like, if it's a rule, maybe it should be a rule, whether it's regular season or postseason. They're not doing this in the postseason.
And I don't see a problem with extra innings. I mean, you know, it taxes the team, but that's on you. I mean, I don't know why I'm not going to say babying these baseball players.
There's so much babying in baseball.
I don't understand why it's like, oh man, we can't have a game go 15 innings. We can't have it go 18.
Rare. They're fun sometimes.
But they're so rare.
Yeah.
It's not like it happens every single year. When was the last 15 inning game that you can remember?
Yeah, there might be a couple a year. Yeah, that's and sometimes those are fun. Those long games.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Yeah. So yeah, I would hope that I kind of changed my tune on this. I at first was like, oh yeah, that might be kind of cool, but then and if you maybe some people have said, all right, start doing that in the 12th inning. All right, you start to maybe cut down on the marathon games, but you don't do it in the 10th. You know, there's no need for that.
Yeah, there's no. Yeah, I mean, I might be able to concede to that, but then. Yeah. Then I probably would hate that too.
Okay. So there's that in baseball. Now, I want to get to the NBA, which has a new wrinkle themselves. And that is, you know, regular season's going to be ending here in a couple weeks. And we always had, you know, eight teams in each conference, and one played eight and two played seven, and we move on. Not anymore. They experimented with this in the bubble last summer, and they're coming back with it. The play-in, top six in each conference are into the first round, but then we have this play-in tournament. Seven plays eight. One game, winner of the game, moves into the first round. Nine plays 10, one game. And then the loser of 7-8 plays the winner of 9-10, and that's for the right to be the eighth seed and get swept in the first round of the playoffs. I don't understand this because basically I can sum it up in two words. Who cares? Who cares, Ron, who is the seventh seed and the eighth seed in the NBA playoffs? Are you going to be glued to the TV to find out the results of these games?
No, but I'm kind of glued to it right now because, like I said, I'm a Lakers fan.
So I bring this up. Did you see what LeBron said last night?
Oh, of course.
So LeBron, you know, the Lakers, who were 21-6, and they were looking like, okay.
Just give them the title now.
Very possibly. There's going to be another, you know, LeBron's going to do it again. And they're, you know, and then Davis gets hurt and LeBron gets hurt. And now they're both back. But, you know, LeBron is clearly not 100%. He's still bothered by that ankle. They lose at home to Toronto last night. And they are very much in danger of having to play in this play-in. They are right now tied for sixth with Portland, and all those teams are bunched together. There's San Antonio and Memphis and Golden State, and so there's a real possibility that the Lakers, having had to play, you know, late into the summer to win the championship, very short off season, then they come back for this shortened regular season, they're going to have to play in this play-in. And so they asked LeBron about it, and he said, whoever came up with that blank, four-letter word starts with S, whoever came up with that blank needs to be fired. I mean, LeBron, he does not want it. It's like beneath him to have to play in this play-in thing. But he may. He may have to. I don't see the need for this thing. I don't get it.
I don't either. And I don't know. Maybe the comments are coming out more just because of the Lakers' current situation where I think they're a game or two out of that play-in tournament.
Yeah, they're right there. They're tied for sixth and seventh. Yeah.
Instead of just making it into the playoffs, being one of the top eight seeds. Yeah, I mean, it's been a dangerous slide. Now, albeit, you know, they just got LeBron back. Anthony Davis was injured for God knows how long. So you had your two main stars out for almost like a good month, almost 2 months. So got them both back now. You know, they'll probably turn around and right the ship once they, you know, once like LeBron gets his game legs back. But, yeah, I think those comments came out more mainly because Lakers are in that situation where, okay, well, now we're going to have to play a whole extra series.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not a series. It's a do or die. It's one game.
But it's also what I think what it is that what a lot of it has to deal with is LeBron has been on this kick anyways all season long about, hey, you know what? We had a short offseason. You're making us play so many games in so many days.
Yeah.
You know, what's the deal? Where's the break? I mean, he didn't want to do the All-Star game.
No, I can't, blame him for that.
Yeah, he thought that was stupid as well. I was like, God, you know, especially if you're a Lakers or a Heat member. I mean, you played throughout the entire bubble, shortened, you know, basically a tournament-style season inside the bubble. And now you're having to, you know, what, cram 72 games in like 60 days? That's what it feels like.
So let me ask you, Laker fan, considering LeBron is not 100%, I assume he'll get better. You know, we still got a little time here before the playoffs start. But as we stand here now, knowing they may have to play in this play-in thing, play a game or two, and not have home court at all, looking at how good Utah and Phoenix have been, Denver's playing well even without Jamal Murray. Can they flick the switch and be what we expected from the Lakers?
I think they can easily flip the switch. My main concern will come when they're actually in the playoffs. And if they're, you know, if they say they end up like as a seventh seed, playing against a two seed, which is that Utah
Phoenix,
right now? Is that
Phoenix or Utah? Yeah, I think they're tied.
That's going to make it a rough road because those teams are really good.
You think they're legit?
They're yes.
And people don't know.
Of course, like, you know, people don't know because they don't have the name brand stars, but they're an actual team. A lot of these teams, like you think about the Brooklyn Nets, right? For example, they're a good 3-man team when they're all playing, or a 2-man team, or a 1-man team. You don't know all the other players, and they're really being led by these three guys once all of them are healthy. And that's the same with the Lakers. I mean, you really know the two of them. They have a third player, you know, a role player here or there, or guys who will step up at certain times. But Utah, Phoenix, Portland, I mean, they have five good players. Denver is another one that's like that. They have five players who are playing, you know, top quality basketball right now.
Well, I'll say this. You know, I don't like this play-in thing, but they're going to do it. But normally you go into the NBA playoffs, and what are there, like two or three or maybe at the most four teams that you look at as possible candidates to win a championship? That's usually it. I remember those years with like the Heat and the Spurs or the Warriors, when the Warriors and the Cavs played every year in the finals. And you knew. I mean, maybe there were a couple other teams. This year, yeah, a lot more candidates because you don't know about the Suns and the Jazz because they haven't done it in the postseason. You don't know what we're going to get from the Lakers. You don't know who's coming out of the East, where the Nets and the Sixers and the Bucks are all kind of bunched together. So, I think the playoffs will be fun, but I don't like the play-in. I don't need that. And I'm with you about the runner at second base. Maybe not quite as strongly as you, but I think we could do away with that. All right, we can step aside. Kentucky Derby on Saturday. How about the Bob Baffert pulling to Tom Brady? That's coming up. I'm John Stashower. This is Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Tony off this morning. I'm John Stashower, pinch hitting. About 5 years ago, 5 years ago, Got to cross off something for the bucket list when I went to the Kentucky Derby. Got to cover it. And it's worth it. You know, I would recommend it. It's even if you're not into horse racing, it's a two-minute sporting event. But it's just a cool place to see, you know, and everybody's all decked out, and you know, which you never see anymore. You never see people dressed up anywhere anymore, let alone a sporting event. So it's a sight. It's a sight to see. So I was actually at a Derby party Saturday. Got to place some money down, and my horse did not do well. Hidden Stash had to go. Hidden Stash unfortunately finished 14th. Medina Spirit wins, and Bob Baffert's won this thing now seven times. Seven of the last 25. I was there at the Belmont when he won with American Pharoah, won the Triple Crown. He's the man. I mean, he's the GOAT for whatever. God knows what it is that why he has this magic formula. And I know he's controversial, and he's you know, taking some criticism for some things that have gone on. But the bottom line is his horses win. He won by a nose, and he's lost some close races by a nose. Earlier on in his career, he's had some heartbreaks and disappointment, but it's amazing. Should put some money on him. Medina Spirit wins the Derby. They had big ratings from NBC. You know, we had the Derby last year on Labor Day weekend. Nobody there. Nobody really watched. But the thing about the Derby, it's 2 minutes of your day. You don't have to watch all the pregame stuff. You watch a little of it. So we'll see if we've got what Baffert's got with Medina Spirit. Coming back for hour number two, a lot of draft talk ahead. Stay with us, Sports Map Radio.